What's up, everybody? Another episode of Ripple Effect Podcast. Today we got a really important guest and hitting on a really important topic. He wrote the book American Addict, Dr. Gregory A. Smith. He's also from the movie of the same title. I believe the book came first, and he hits on an important issue. I think back in the day, everybody knew a recovering alcoholic and whatnot. Today, it seems like pills is a new addiction. I think in the 60s and 70s, everybody heard about drug overdose from rock stars and stuff. And now it seems like celebrities, you know, pills is a new big issue. And I think that he's doing a pretty ballsy thing talking about just the issue and really not holding back. So I just want to thank Dr. Gregory A. Smith for being on the Ripple Effect Podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me, you guys. Appreciate it.
Hey, thanks. Hey, just one statistic that you've mentioned a lot in interviews and in the movie, and I think it's really important because I think it kind of highlights how big of an issue this is the fact that the U.S. is 5% of the world's population, and I think we consume 80% of the world's prescriptions or something like it's similar to that.
Well, it's 80% of the world's prescription hydrocodone, which are drugs like Vicodin and Norco. And 50% of the world's prescriptions in general, which is insane. I mean, there's no way that this is just a coincidence. This is a purposeful thing. It's by design. And if people don't know this information to protect themselves, it's going to wreak havoc on their lives and the people that they care about.
And why? I mean, I know that one thing that people don't realize is that we're one of two countries, I believe, that actually can market directly to consumers. Is that correct?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Yes.
So that's a huge issue. I forget. I don't know if it was Bill Maher or some comedian once said. He's like, you know, once you, you know, before your doctors used to tell you what to take, and now you go to doctors suggesting, you know, prescriptions, and now, you know, basically they've become your drug dealer when you do that. And I think that's a huge issue because and you've hit it on your in your movie, the idea that, you know, they kind of there's a pill for almost everything, you know, whatever the issue is. I mean, you look at low T, and you talked about it in your movie, and it's funny because I've used that as an example in the past before, that low T was just considered aging. It was considered getting old. And now,
yeah.
You know, and now they called a, you know, a issue or a, something you need to be treated for. And now they, you know, obviously they come out with whatever it is, that cream that gives women mustaches or whatever it is. And you know, so it seems like they're just constantly looking for something. They're not even really curing things. They're just trying to treat things, and it seems like that's the focus. And do you think that basically the issue is the fact that it's a corporation, that people have to realize that even though it's in a medical field and these medicines were designed to, I guess, in theory, help people, behind that, it's still a corporation that the sole purpose is to make money. And it's not about, you know, it's not about how do they make money or whatnot. It's about quarterly gains. It's about making money. And do you think that that ends up trumping profits, ends up trumping morals, and then that ends up causing all these other issues?
That is, in a nutshell, yes. What you have here is a situation where in the pharmaceutical companies, FDA, the media, wherever you look, and these are all closely integrated to cause this sort of over-medicalization of our population. And I always tell people that I'm not going around just vilifying the pharmaceutical companies and the FDA. It's easy to because there's a lot of bad things that have been done, but there's a lot of good people that work in these corporations. They're just trying to make their paycheck and have a living like anybody else. But when you go up to the top levels of these corporations, there is an agenda that's often played out, and this is what you see, where profits and shareholders and earnings start to overrun what's good for the general public. So it's fine if you're selling, you know, screwdrivers or something like that, but when you're selling medications that people are depending on for their health and they're trusting the doctors that are giving it to them, this is where it becomes a problem. And no one's ever gone to jail or anything for some of the criminal acts that have occurred from the pharmaceutical companies. And the thing is that the relationship between the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies is ridiculous. I said a couple weeks ago, I don't know if I was on Coast to Coast or some whatever show, but it was right after the Super Bowl. And I said that how ridiculous would it be if we were watching Seattle and the Denver Broncos, and right before kickoff, Denver announced that they were giving all the referees a $100,000 bonus out of their own pocket because they're going to do such a good job reffing the game. Well, people would be up in arms. No one would even let the game play out. How ridiculous for the Broncos to be paying the referees who are going to oversee the game. Well, the same thing has been going on for years with the FDA and the pharmaceutical companies, and no one seems to understand how ludicrous and it's just ridiculous where they're getting sometimes up to $1 billion for an application for a drug from the pharmaceutical company to the FDA. And then the FDA is supposed to turn around and just regulate that same company's medications with clear hands. And that's just not going to happen. Common sense says that's not going to happen. And if we have time, we can talk about a brand new drug that's coming out next month that's probably going to make OxyContin look like child's play, that came through just like this, should never be on the market, and it's coming at us in about 30 days.
Isn't that the one? I think I saw you share it on Facebook or Twitter, right? It was I think it just got approved.
Zohydro, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not – I mean, what's the benefit of it? Is it – it's just a stronger version of it? Like, we don't have enough issues?
It's like, let's just throw some gasoline on the fire.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in a perfect world, it actually has an application – because it's a long-acting hydrocodone. So hydrocodone, again, is the main ingredient in Vicodin, Norco, Lortabs, these type of medications. And the problem in the past is that it doesn't last very long. You have to take several. They only last 4 to 6 hours, whatever. So I see the thought process of bringing out a pill that's long-acting, but the problem is there's no anti-tampering mechanisms in this stuff at all. You can literally just open it up and snort it, you can liquefy it, inject it, and that's the problem. Even OxyContin, they made it the other way for 10, 12 years, but they finally reformulated, just like Opana reformulated. But these people, knowing the history, have come out with a drug that is so easily diverted, it's unbelievable. And their own advisory board overwhelmingly said, do not let this thing come out in the market, and they released it anyway.
Wow. And OxyContin is a huge issue. I think Florida's kind of cleaned up his act a little bit because it had to, because it was, it was focused on. But, I mean, they had just doctors giving it out like candy in Florida. Like, you just go in and say you have a back issue, and then they were giving it out. And then I believe there's no, like, database where they were basically keeping up with the amount of prescriptions people were getting. So they could just go hop from doctor to doctor and just get a new prescription. And really, it's like synthetic, you know, people. I think the thing about getting something through a doctor, we don't look at it as the same light as we do heroin or cocaine, but really it is synthetic heroin and cocaine, isn't it? I mean, basically.
Well, when these drugs are manufactured in a laboratory, they are tweaked so that they bind the narcotic receptors very tightly. So they're designed to work. So the purpose, when they're used for the right purpose, again, if you are skiing and you break your leg, if you're in a traumatic accident, you want pain medicine, bring on the pain medicine. That's what it's for. The problem is that when it gets diverted on the street there, and also used for chronic issues with no endpoint in sight, those are the problems. But when people get this recreationally, there's a misconception that because it's a medicine that it's somehow safer or that it won't hurt them, and nothing could be further than the truth. You're getting an extremely potent medication when people snort, you know, smoke this stuff, inject it, whatever. And it's really a lack of education that people don't realize how bad it is for them.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge issue. I think people don't realize that it's a synthetic. And I think that now a lot of when a lot of drug users who are using, you know, coke or whatever, now a lot of them have probably migrated to these pharmaceutical grade drugs because, one, they are pharmaceutical grade, and two, you can deal with a doctor and not a drug dealer. And what do you think about, you know, that issue, the fact that, you know, you look at it, what is it doing to the drug users who are using street drugs? Are they migrating towards them, or have they both influence each other, where, like, street users are using prescriptions and prescriptions are using street drugs? Are they both kind of helping each other out, you know, in that sense?
Well, the drug dealers have certainly made the adjustment. I mean, they're selling the pills just like they're selling any other street drug. But what we've seen is that the OxyContin phase has really shifted and caused an explosion of heroin use, because heroin's simply cheaper. And a lot of people can't afford the OxyContin, or maybe they can't, the doctors have caught on to them. there's a variety of reasons, but they switched to heroin. And the heroin is the highest quality it's ever been, because it's another subject, but our forces are overseeing this stuff coming in. Basically, when you look at how we supposedly liberated the Afghanistan areas, the people replaced their wheat fields with poppy fields because it's just way more profitable. So you can, make a dollar for wheat or make $10 for, poppy plants. So there's pictures of our soldiers standing in the poppy fields as they're harvesting this stuff that gets basically converted to heroin and hits the streets of the United States. So, like I said, it's a different subject and a little bit of conspiracy of how that goes on. But we do know that if you go back before the war, they were supplying maybe, 2 to 5% of the world's heroin, and now they're supplying 85-90%. And a couple of years ago, it was even higher than that. Mexico's starting to bring in heroin now, but they're still overwhelmingly the world's number one supplier of heroin. So they go hand in hand. And the United States has an insatiable appetite for drugs. And that's why everybody brings them over here.
Yeah, we've talked about that on the show, how on Fox News they had, they were actually televising these soldiers just guarding the poppy leaves. And it's insane because, like you said, I mean, there's obviously something going on when we have so much military there and we're protecting them, but yet all this potent heroin is getting into the country. Either they're letting it happen or, and I think that's probably, not to sound like a conspiracy theorist, but it probably is the case. And Mexico is the same thing. We're only helping the Mexican cartels by, by basically making coke and heroin illegal. And then these addicts who obviously need their fix and can't get it from a doctor anymore, now they need to get it from another source. Then, basically you're making these other sources or these cartels rich because of that. What do you think about the idea of the experiment Portugal did and the whole idea of making, decriminalizing drugs? Because I think they have a interesting perspective on things, because they look at addiction as a disease and not something that you can cure like America tries to do by throwing people in a cage and then saying, hey, when you get out, you're better, And I think that they look at it as, let's focus more on, instead of punishing them, let's focus more on trying to fix their disease, their issue, and decriminalizing things. Do you think something like that would work? Do you think, obviously it worked there, but do you think it would work here?
That's so funny you bring this up, because right before, I'm in the California and Pacific Coast time, but I just had lunch before I came here with the CEO of Idrisil, a company that makes the first cannabis-based pill that I prescribed to people, and it's a great pill. And we were talking about this exact issue about what would happen if you just decriminalize all drugs, and what's happened in Portugal and some other countries. And I think it's obviously seeming to be a positive there, because it's a lot smaller situation. And I think there's merits to it. I think in our country, it would be very difficult to make basically all drugs legal, and it's a huge question. There's a lot of reasons for it, but certainly marijuana, I think, should be legal, period, not just medically, but just legal. It's ridiculous when all the people that are slamming against walls and fighting each other in bar fights and everything else that happens with alcohol, and all the death and destruction related to alcohol, which you can get anytime, anywhere. And then I've never seen anybody die of a marijuana overdose. They just get sleepy or tired or silly or just go eat something. So, I mean, I think it just should be legalized. But it's hard for me to get on board to legalize it all for a lot of reasons. But in smaller countries, especially when they have very high crime rates in their crime, and a lot of the politics is related between there's a link between the politics or the politicians and the crime and the police officers, et cetera. There's good reasons why they made it legal. It reduces the crime rate and you can marginalize these people and actually, hopefully, in those countries, I'm not sure if they're doing this, but tax the sale of those drugs. But in this country, I think marijuana for sure, but I can't get on board for crack for everybody.
Yeah. Well, I definitely think that if people don't believe that possibly, the best interests of people are really the concern, is just look at marijuana. Like you said, you look at marijuana. I mean, Dr. Sanjay Gupta had that, on mainstream media, on CNN, had that documentary basically saying I was wrong about marijuana and people have been lied to. And the idea that basically a plant, a natural plant that has so much benefit and could help so many people with so many different medical issues, is illegal. When, like you said, alcohol, which it just, you know, kills car accidents, domestics, you know, causes domestics, causes so many issues, and yet that's legal and regulated, but yet marijuana is just completely illegal. So, I mean, it shows that obviously there's some other interest in doing these things, and it's not just, you know, let's just do what's the best for people. And yeah, marijuana is a perfect example. I mean, even hemp's another plant that has plenty of benefits and has it doesn't get you high. I mean, there's no reason why. You know, the first American flag was made out of hemp. You know, Henry Ford's, I think, first production car was made out of hemp. You know, it just, and I think you can buy it, you can get it from other countries, but you can't grow it, which is another thing that makes absolutely no sense. I think we import most of it from Canada or something like that. But yeah, so that's a perfect example. I think people have a hard time believing that the FDA isn't looking out for us. But, you know, you showed it in your movie, you know, just that bill that the Medicare bill that passed, that signing where everybody who sponsored it was basically getting campaign money from big pharma and stuff like that. And like you said, when they're in bed together, especially, and I think the original bill you talked about was the early 90s one, right? That where basically you could fast track things or what was it that basically you could pay?
It was that's how the thing went on steroids in terms of the FDA getting money from big pharmas when they were trying to start fast tracking drugs, like when HIV, when there was no good treatment for that and people were dying so fast. Of course, you want to have a way to fast track drugs, so that's when some of these relationships escalated. And again, the FDA. A lot of good people working there, a lot of scientists, a lot of doctors. I do think they do a good job in many ways, but it's when you hit that point where is it the money or the health of the people, that's when the money trumps the health. And that's where the problem is. When there's a bad drug and the FDA sees a bad drug early, they get rid of it because there's not a lot of money spent. The problem is when you get a drug like Zohydro that gets to the finish line, and they've spent hundreds of millions of dollars in research and development and marketing and all the things they're going to do to get this thing out. And then someone in a lab says, hey, we just found out this thing causes heart disease, or we just found out this drug does this, and, you know, like with Vioxx and Fenfen in the 90s. And they get suppressed because the amount of money lost is so dramatic. And nobody wants to say this is what happens, but this is exactly what happens, because once it happens years later and the documents are released or people get hold of the memos, and that's when you see the truth, that studies showed that Vioxx was going to do the things it did. Studies showed that the Fenfen would cause the cardiomyopathies and the other morbidity and mortalities. But right now, I'm sure, I mean, I'm speculating, but you can probably look at the new drugs coming out like Zohydro that's going to cause problems, and we'll probably find out after the fact that there was information suppressed, et cetera. It's really horrible. So people have to, when you look at the solutions, people really have to be responsible for themselves. That's where it starts, educating themselves, asking the doctor, why am I getting this pill, and actually getting second opinions from alternative health providers like naturopaths or functional medicine, integrative medicine doctors, and not just going to your family doctor and blindly following what they say. Those days are over. It's just that simple.
Yeah, we actually have a good friend of ours who owns a nutrition and supplement store, you know, and he, you know, big into vitamins and natural stuff. And he actually had an older woman work there who's 87, is in incredible health. She was a genius when it came down to natural remedies, and she was just, you know, she basically put it simple. And I think you said something similar too on one of your interviews, that your body, when something's wrong, your body usually needs more of something. And if you can just basically get the information to figure out which vitamin or mineral or whatever herb that could help out with that, that should be a first resort. And these pharmaceutical drugs should be a last resort, because obviously anything that you put in your body that has that kind of list of side effects, it obviously can't be good for you. I mean, your body doesn't recognize what it is, and it's just, you're throwing something strange and abnormal in your body, and your body's like, what do I do with this? And that's, I mean, obviously I'm not a doctor, so, but I'm assuming it's because of that. It's because your body doesn't recognize it and doesn't know what the hell to do with it, is why all those side effects happen. And it seems like you said, unfortunately, you know, before we did used to go to our doctors and ask them for their opinions, but now it seems like, and it correct me if I'm wrong, does it seem like, you know, there's a lot of good doctors out there, but unfortunately the problem is that you go to a nutritionist or somebody who knows about vitamins and stuff like that, they would know about that herbal stuff and could give you some good alternatives that to try first, but unfortunately your doctor just doesn't, in obviously going to school and going to college or whatever, like you just don't get that type of information. You focus on pharmaceutical drugs and you know, certain sips, how to
Look who's paying, look who's subsidizing the medical schools, the residency programs, the medical meetings. It's pharmaceutical companies. I mean, I was trained the same way, but there has to be a period of unlearning and a willingness to learn new things. And you're actually taught in medical school that other stuff is quackery, that we basically have all the answers. And we do have a lot of the answers for, again, some of the acute problems. If you need emergency trauma surgery, heart surgery, transplant surgery, I mean, there is no place you would rather be. And herbs and supplements aren't going to do anything for that. If you need a new liver, if you need a heart transplant, whatever. But when it comes to preventative medicine and chronic disease, the doctors are treating with the same sort of shotgun approach here with medication. And it's not, I don't really blame doctors, because we were not taught this. So we were taught that, okay, if the person can't sleep, then the first thing we think of is they need a sleeping pill. If they're having anxiety and panic attacks, then they need a Xanax or a Valium to calm them down. We have to unlearn that, because why are they not sleeping? Why are they anxious in the first place? If you get to the root cause of the problem, they don't need any medicine. Maybe they need some Xanax or Valium because they're having full-blown panic attacks and heart racing, but you give them that and then find out and treat the root cause. But the problem is that the pills become the solution to the problem long-term. And it's great for business. As I've said many times, sick people that stay alive for a long time, like diabetes and high blood pressure, that's great for business, because they keep coming back every month to get a refill.
And yeah, we actually had a Dr. Brzezinski on a couple of weeks ago, and I don't know if you know his work.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And he's a kind of similar story, you know, with just him kind of highlighting the issues with the FDA and just, you know, similar issues with, you know, basically focusing on treating somebody or keeping somebody on a pill. I mean, I think Chris Rock said it best, you know, there's no money in a cure. You know, there's money in keeping somebody on a pill. That's why I love comedy, because it's like it's a good way of getting a point across. And then if people laugh, it's like, oh, yeah, well, it makes sense, too. So but it's so true. Like, if you keep somebody on a pill, it obviously it's profitable. And I think that, you know, they're not nonprofit organizations. They're not, you know, they're corporations that their sole purpose is to make money. So, I mean, unfortunately, like you said, I think the issue, too, is that it's not that like Pfizer or these big corporations are like there's this one evil guy on top who's making all these bad decisions. I think that there's so many different parts involved that people don't even realize what they're doing. You know, there's somebody who's looking at, you know, quarterly gains, or somebody who's focused on marketing, and they don't see the whole picture of what it's doing to society and what it's doing to the culture. And they're creating a bunch of stuff. I mean, you look at ADHD, you look at ADD. I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm sure there's probably something to it, but I think we give out those prescriptions too fast. And, you know, when my parents were growing up, or I'm sure when yours were growing up, you know, some kids were more hyper, some kids were less hyper. It didn't mean that the kid that was more hyper needed a pill. Some kids were smiling and in a better mood. Some kids weren't, in good moods. Doesn't mean that, you know, you give a pill to every little issue. And it seems like, I mean, I'm going to watch TV later tonight and they'll be like, oh, do you do podcasts? You must have this issue. You know, take this pill. You know, it's like it seems like they just come up with anything to give somebody a pill for. And how does this happen? Because there's so many, is obviously a lot of these things are backed by, research and stuff like that. But I mean, like ADD, ADHD, why isn't there more? I mean, because if somebody goes in there and says my kid's hyper, there's not really many other questions asked, you know. I mean, and there's no, I don't believe that there's really any tests that go into it. I know that when it comes down to like depression, and you go in, you say I'm depressed, they say you have a chemical imbalance, but they don't really check which chemical is imbalance or how imbalanced it is, or you know, you look at it, if you have a knee issue, they don't just give you surgery. You take MRIs, you take x-rays, you try to figure out what the issue is so they can fix it. But if you have some of these other issues, they just give you a pill without ever really trying to figure out and pinpointing what's causing it and what the issue is. And why is that? Do you think that it's by design? You think it's just, you know,
well, yeah. Psychological issues and mental issues are always been very subjective to the physician or the healthcare providers looking at it, and there are lots of different forms and inventories of questions that are used to try and determine what a patient's problem is, but again, we are in a situation where the pharmaceutical is the first option. So when you look at the attention deficit disorders and what's going on in children, you have very young children super medicated at school, it is so harmful, it's beyond belief. And sometimes you have to just look at what's going on at home or why, again, get to the root cause. Are there some kids that need that medicine? Absolutely. But the majority, in my opinion, and in the opinion of experts, and we had a few in our film, that is over medicated. And here's the thing that's really crazy. And we did not, and this is one of the things that we're covering in the second film, and that is the link between crime and these mass murders, these mass shootings at schools and things like this with these drugs, psychotropic drugs. And the links are staggering. I mean, it's like you can go down for the last 20 or 30 years, almost every crazy mass shooting, whether it's Sandy Hook, the Batman shooting, Batman shooting. These people were all on psychotropic drugs, but yet the mainstream media wants to blame the guns and give it another way to say, let's get everyone needs to turn their guns in. And the guns are not the problem. The problem with these people are medicated. And when you give young people, especially children, adolescents, and teenagers, these medications, they have more of an effect than giving it on an adult because their brains are still developing. So you cause permanent brain damage, literally, to these kids. And when they get older, they get even more susceptible to have problems. Now, you could get a doctor's psychiatrist hearing this will be probably screaming into their computer, or radio, whatever, when they hear me say this. But it's not because I'm bashing what they do. But I'm not bashing them because they're doing what they were taught. But if they start to open their minds and look at the research in total, and not just what comes to their into their email boxes from the journals, but look at what other people, especially other countries, have done, it's overwhelming that these things are bad. Just like overwhelming evidence of the problems with vaccines, but it's ignored because big money's at play here. Just imagine if everyone decided we're not going to vaccinate our children anymore. How much money would be lost every year? That is automatic money. Same thing with these pills. So you're cutting out all of industry, whole entire industries, if you actually get to the root cause of the problem. But medicating kids with these drugs is criminal. It's horrible.
Yeah,
Horrible.
that mass shooting thing. You're right. That's another thing that I've brought up before. Was I don't think people realize that all these kids were on something, and to say that there's not a link to it. You know, I think it was Joe Rogan who said that we're hiding our mental illness issue, our prescription drug issue, with a gun issue, and that's what it seems like. It seems like, you know, we're focusing on the gun, but guess what? You know, if he doesn't have a gun, he might make a bomb. He might do, you know. So it's like eliminating the gun's not gonna get to the root of the issue. So you're absolutely right. I think that it seems like mainstream media won't focus on what they're taking. And I mean, I'm sure they do blood work out, you know, on these kids. Like, I'm sure that they find out what they're on. Why don't they release that? You'd think that you know, pharmaceutical companies have a hand in basically making sure that whatever specific drug they're on doesn't get released, to kind of obviously for the lack of PR reasons.
Well, they have a huge control of the media. I mean, there is a show, a TV show, national TV show that I was supposed to appear on recently. And if I said the name of the show, you would know it immediately. I'm not going to say it, but literally the day before I was supposed to go on, I guess one of the producers, they'd watched part of the film. And I guess they saw part of it where we're sort of bashing Big Pharma. If they really looked at the whole movie and understood what my message is, I'm not bashing, I'm not trying to bash, I'm just trying to get truth out there to protect people. But they basically called my publicist and said, you know, off the record, that Pfizer was one of their biggest sponsors, and they read the they just the thumbs down to have me on there. And I wasn't even going to talk about that. That was the ironic part, but they were just afraid that the subject would come up and we would start talking about these big pharma things. Big pharma is going to make billions and billions and tens of billions of dollars every year, even if they do if they even by doing the right thing. They're just making extra billions by doing this other stuff. So it's not like they wouldn't be profitable. So a lot of it's just greed, because there's no reason to unleash this stuff. on the American public. And another thing that's very, very not very well understood or talked about at all, we do cover this a little bit in the movie, Donald Light, his PhD, that really has done a lot of work in this, is that the majority of these drugs that keep coming out that are brand new don't work any better than drugs that are already out, that have been out for 10, 20 years, that are cheaper because they're generic form. So you have to ask yourself, why do they keep bringing out a new blood pressure pill? Why do they keep coming out with a new pill for the diabetes or whatever? And the answer is money, because when the drug is on patent, nobody else can make it except for that company. And that's the sweet spot of time where they can really charge basically a high premium price for that drug because no one else can make it. Once it goes generic, then everybody makes it and the price goes way down. So you have a stimulus to keep pushing drugs out, new drugs out in the market, that in a large part of the time don't work any better than the old ones. And we have more information on the old ones, so we have more experience with the old ones, so they're really safer because we have more data on them. And it's crazy that this is even happening.
Yeah, and you talked about off-label use also in your movie, and yeah, the mainstream media thing. I saw you guys on RT with Breaking the Set, Abby Martin. That was awesome because that's one of the few shows that it still kind of gets real stories on and hits on real topics. So that was
True.
Really cool. But yeah, I mean, people have to realize that mainstream media, they're too busy talking about the Kardashians or whatever, and they don't focus on these issues. And especially as big as the pill issue has become, I mean, it's become, I think, a huge percentage of people or accidental deaths are from overdoses. I know it lowers life expectancy. I know that I read something recently about it being like a gateway to like how more likely kids are to end up using heroin or coke or ecstasy or alcohol if they're on prescription drugs. And so I just think that the fact that it's not focused on is insane, because I mean we like to bash marijuana. You'll get the Bill O'Reillys and whoever who or the Nancy Graces who will bash marijuana, but then 2 seconds later there'll be a commercial for some pill that has these crazy side effects, and it's just normal, and it's no big deal, so it's definitely a huge issue. I'm glad that you, because your book came out first, right? You did the book and then the movie came
Well,
out after.
actually, the book isn't even out yet.
Oh, really?
I stopped writing the book when we started doing the movie. So the book is actually going to come out like in June. And the book, the two movies, and the book, they're all different, even though they sort of obviously have the same title. They all have different information. The book is really more about exposing these, but really more what individuals can do to help themselves. And that'll be announced and put out on our website and everywhere else when it comes out. But it's due out in early June at this point. But you bring up a great point about this, and you said something interesting a second ago about why is the mainstream media, why aren't they telling us this? And the answer, you have to look at that and go, why aren't they telling us? Is it just money? Is there a more sinister agenda? One of the things that I cover in the book that is coming out is that I talk about the distracted society that we live in. Everybody has so much stimulus. Dr. Russell Blaylock, who I think is a very brilliant guy, I'm sure you've probably seen him speak. He's been on a lot of programs, a lot of alternative media. He says that we're getting entertained to death, and he's right. I mean, between the movies and TV and sports and Facebook and this and that, people can't focus on what's really happening in front of them. So people can do bad things to people in secret, even though it's in plain sight. And I think that the medications play a role in this. When you have 70% of Americans that are taking at least one prescription pill a day, and 50% of Americans are taking two or more pills a day, it's not just the addiction part of it, but it's the part of these medications that can affect people's cognitive abilities. People are often in a cloud or in a zone. So you can get more over people when they're distracted. And I think this is an enormous problem. And this explains why often there are political leaders, in my opinion, that get elected that shouldn't get elected, because people are getting their information from one narrow source, usually a few, two or three stations on television, the main stations. And then they're so distracted, so overworked, trying to pay their bills, so occupied. They don't have time to read books or anything, or to read alternative media, or to do other things to educate themselves. And that's one of the biggest problems I think that faces our society in general.
Oh, I completely agree. I think one of our biggest issues is the fact that nobody has time to really do their own research or whatnot, and because basically society's designed this world where we're, like you said, we're constantly stimulated. We have our phones going off, we have TV commercials, all these things are designed to stimulate us and get our attention. And then we have to pick up the kids, we gotta we have bills in the mail, so we're constantly stressed. And obviously stress has the enormous is a enormous issue with aging and all these other medical issues that it causes, and it just we're constantly overstimulated, and we don't. I think it's one of those things where if we lived a more laid back lifestyle, it seems like those people live longer, they're less stressed, they're healthier, they look better, and it just. I mean, look at recently with all the bankers that are committing suicide. Just. I mean, that's definitely from being stressed. That's a J.P. Morgan, I think, just had one recently. All the UK bankers. These guys are just. One guy worked, I think, 21 hours, 3 days in a row, then he killed himself. It's If I was working 21 hours for 3 days, I'd probably kill myself too. I mean, that sounds like an awful lifestyle, And it's insane, It's just, I think that the way society's designed things is just we're constantly overstimulated all the time, have no time to breathe, no time to think. And democracy and only works when people get the right information. Like you said, most of us only have time to throw on CNN or Fox News or MSNBC in the back. Background and while we're cooking or cleaning or going through our bills and managing things, and so we're just getting whatever news is fed to us without ever doing any real research on any of that stuff that's being fed to us. And that's a huge issue because people aren't informed. And I know I have some people that say, oh, well, people are dumb, they should do their research. But I'm like, honestly, unfortunately, we live in a world where we put people in debt early. We have we're convincing people that what type of car you have is more important than what type of person you are, or how big your car or how big your house is, or how attractive your wife is, and all these things. And what that causes is that we're constantly a slave to labor and a slave to working just to maintain that and keep that public perception. And then what ends up happening is we can't focus on what's really important, and that's being healthy, doing research, and knowing that the information we're getting is truthful and not deceiving. And so that's a huge issue, and I think it's something that we don't look at enough. I've talked about it a few times on the podcast about blue zones and just like the places in the world where people live the longest and longest life expectancy, and they have a very less stimulated life. I mean, they're usually farmers and they're usually laid back and maybe more labor intensive physically, but a lot less mentally intensive and with stress and stuff like that. And it seems like there's a lot there, there's some truth to that the world we live in is just like our bodies. I mean, people forget that this type of life is kind of new to our primitive nature. It's like it wasn't that long ago that we were riding horses and stuff like that. Now out of nowhere, we got cell phones and we have text messages and watches that vibrate when you get a text message, so and then you can constantly be notified when something's happening and you're just constantly being distracted. So it seems like a very unnatural world for us that to live in that we're not adapted to.
Just talking about it, you can feel stressed, right? Just talking about all the different things that's going on, it just gets you worked up. And here's the sad part, right? After people have all this pressure, financial pressure, and different things to do, like I said, dealing with the kids, the school, the this, the money, and then they get stressed out, they can't sleep, which makes they're unable to deal with their problems even more, because insomnia is an epidemic in itself, and you're less prepared for the day when you're sleepy, and you make mistakes, and it's like a vicious cycle. And then you show up at your doctor, and you tell you, I can't sleep, I'm stressed out, I had to pull off the side of the highway in hypervigilance, I'm having a panic attack, and he goes, look, I have just the thing for you, more pills. So it all works, it all works in sequence. So if you just start to unravel the ills of society, so to speak, like you just illustrated, a lot of this other stuff will just go away. We're treating the symptoms with pills that are band-aids, and then the side effects from those pills and other problems with more pills. It is just a horrible situation. And the only thing that really encourages me are really programs like this, the internet, where people can start to hear the truth, because it does change people's lives when they really make adaptions and start to say, look, this isn't worth it anymore. I'm not going to continue to participate in this merry-go-round. I'm going to start eating right. I'm going to buy organic food instead of eat these toxic foods from the fast food restaurants. Or I'm going to start doing different things because money talks. And just like we've seen in organic foods, a great example, as people have more and more awakened in terms of what's going on with our food in this country, and there needs to be a lot more awakening. But the more and more people are wanting organic foods and things that don't have all the preservatives. You're seeing regular grocery stores now stocking or having organic food sections. You didn't see that at all 8, 10, 12 years ago. The proliferation of stores like Whole Foods all over the country have just exploded because people want something better. So you can, that's where the hope to me is. You can do this with healthcare or stress or any other parts of life that have issues. If people start to flex their economic muscle, then people will listen. I guarantee you, if people start to reject some of the medications and go more and more to natural paths or integrated medical, functional medicine physicians, things like this, the big pharmaceutical companies will step in line. They're going to go where the money's going to go because we've already seen that in the food industry. You have big corporations buying up these organic corporations and keeping the organic names. But Nestle or Coca-Cola is behind some of the organic name brands that we have because they don't want their profits to go. So people do have the power, but without the knowledge, without knowing what's really going on, they have nothing. And that's why programs like this are very, very important.
Yeah, thanks. I appreciate that because that's kind of one of the goals is just to kind of expose a lot of interesting stories and information, and then hope that, you know, I guess not to use the title of the podcast, but to cause a ripple effect. And I think that too many people think they can't make a difference or they can't, you know, cause any type of ripple. But I think that it's deceiving because we can. I think that even if you only change one person's mind or expose them to certain issues or topics, that, you know, they'll end up sharing that information with somebody else, and that'll go on and so forth. And I think that you know, it's everybody who thinks they can make a change deciding to attempt to that. You know, I think one, you'll have a sense of fulfillment. I think we can sleep at night a lot better knowing that we're trying to make the world a better place than, you know, than it is. And I think that we can make a difference. I think that having these conversations are important. I think, like you said, overstimulating is a huge issue, and that's why I love podcasts and I love having these alternative medias and stuff like that, because not too many people actually sit down and actually talk about these topics, and a lot of people don't have time to. And so it's good to, you know, it's almost, you know, we talked about, because my co-host Dave's a big yoga guy, and we talk about how, you know, I think the reason why yoga got popular is because people don't have any time to relax and meditate and kind of reflect and kind of, you know, inhale and exhale and kind of forget about their issues. And I think yoga is a big, one of the big trends because of that. And like you said, corporations only care about money. They'll go where trends go. I have a buddy who couldn't find gluten-free anything because he was allergic to gluten for a long time. And now because there's money in gluten-free stuff and because it's kind of got trendy, now there's a whole section in a store for gluten-free stuff. And like you said, the
Yeah.
GMOs and stuff like that, like as and it's same thing happened with tobacco. I think I was reading somewhere where tobacco companies have gone into the electric cigarette business just because, you know, so the first they were selling you one thing, now they're selling you the competitor because they, like you said, they only care about profit. So,
they follow the money. Yeah, they follow the money. Very, very, very true. I couldn't agree more. And I think that that all these things to me play into a larger picture. And when people really start to connect all these dots, that it's a matter of control. And when people are medicated and they're eating bad food and they're constantly distracted and they're being worked to death just to pay the bills, they could be easily controlled. And I think that's the danger. And when you see a lot of things that happen in politics, and then they do these polls and they say, well, the majority of people don't want this, but the law was still passed, or the majority of people think that the Congress or the president and all these people are doing a bad job, but they're still in office. You have to understand why, because when it then comes time to vote or when it comes time to act, then they are very good at running these ads on the mainstream media, and that's where most people are getting their information. So people lockstep and go ahead and elect people once again that often do the same or even worse than the predecessors. But if people had a little time per day, and I just, you mentioned meditation, things like that, 30 to 60 minutes a day of people sitting in silence, especially if you do it in the morning when you first get up. Close your eyes, deep breathe. You can call it meditating, praying, whatever you want, but relaxation techniques, you get a lot of insight into yourself and into how you want to conduct the rest of that day. And I always say to myself, win the day, live in the present moment, win that particular day. And as time goes on, you accumulate more winning days and you can actually accomplish something. And when you take that time to clear your mind and to relax yourself, then you can start to say, well, maybe I can take another 30 minutes and I can read this book, or maybe I can take another 30 minutes and listen to some alternative media to get the other perspective than what ABC or Fox or CNN or MSNBC gave me. And that's, I think, will turn the tide, and we can hopefully have literally a mental revolution, and not a violent type revolution, but a revolution of people really open their minds and understand what's going on in this country, what's going on and what's being perpetrated onto them, so they can do something about it. And because always people have the control if they have the knowledge, and that's the bottom line in my opinion.
Yeah, no, I agree, and I think that they're slowly but surely, I think there is a revolution of minds and awakening. I think that, you know, you look at like 10 years ago or 15 years ago, many people didn't even know what a GMO was. A lot of people didn't realize all these issues we had with pills and stuff like that. And I think that little by little we are, you know, people, and we do have the capability with all the technology today to basically use it for good and you know, do our own research. And you know, when you were growing up, I'm you know, or I was growing up, if we wanted to research something, a lot of times we had to go to a library and look up a book, where today, I mean, we don't pay for anything. You can get all this information for free online, and you can you know, research any issue whatsoever. And and I think people have to use that. I think people and I think people are using that. I think there are a lot of people. I mean, you go online and you see, you know, grassroots people just putting together groups that are fighting GMOs or fighting Monsanto or fighting, you know, prescription pills or whatever. And I think that it's happening, because I mean, it is connecting us. So I think that's a plus. I mean, if we grew up in the 80s, we could never have a podcast with somebody from LA. You know, we've had people on from Japan.
Absolutely.
You know, from Japan and stuff. So it's awesome. So I think people just have to use it in a positive manner. And the other thing about awful label use, me and Dave were actually talking before we went on the air about you know, the issue with, so somebody can actually, they prescribe you something for an issue, and then basically, it sounds wicked illegal, and I think it is. They can basically. I mean, how do you get through to a doctor to sell them the idea of maybe, hey, this also works for this? But there's also some prescription drugs that weren't even designed for what they're popular for now, too, right? That's happened too, right?
Well, here, okay. Let me explain the off-labeling process, because I know what was said in the film, but I somewhat disagree a little bit with what was said in my own film about it, because I think off-labeling is not always a bad situation. When you become a doctor, your degree says physician and surgeon. You could be a psychiatrist, and your degree still says you're a physician and surgeon, but you wouldn't want a psychiatrist doing surgery on you, because he's not trained that way. But the way that the degree is that it allows for a physician to make certain judgment calls. So when a medication is put on the market for a specific reason, then sometimes if a doctor is in their own minds or in their own sort of experimentation, say, you know what, I think this could work for this particular reason also. Very small amount of people that are even in the market for your drug. But all of a sudden it says, well, you know, everybody that took it gets sleepy, so let's use it as a sleeping pill. And so now you got people on schizophrenic drugs to go to bed to get sleep at night. And how many million, tens of hundreds of millions of people can't sleep? So now your market just exploded. So what's illegal about it is when the drug rep would come to your office and tell you, well, you know, some doctors are using it for this. And that's pretty much gone away. These drug reps are so scared to say anything. That rarely happens. But the trick is that you have a medical meeting or a dinner. What happens is the pharmaceutical companies will have a dinner at a great, you know, some Beverly Hills restaurant, and they invite the doctors for a night out, and you get to eat and drink all you want. And then they have a colleague or another paid physician that's going to speak to you about their product. And that physician can legally say, you know, by the way, I use this drug all the time for sleep, and it works great for that. So even though the drug company didn't say it, they hired the doctor to say it to other doctors, so it has authority. And now you have that room full of doctors, 30, 40 doctors, go out and start writing the next day for that drug off-label. And that's what they got in trouble for, is that sort of funding this illegal, because the FDA didn't approve it for that particular thing. So, and then often what happens is the FDA will later give more approvals. So you'll see a drug get approved for, say, pain, and then a year later it's approved for migraine headaches, and a year later it's approved for this. But until it's legally FDA approved, they're not supposed to promote it off-labeling, but they do it in a slick way. And that's what all these huge, huge lawsuits have been. But one other thing, I know I'm talking for a long time here, but one other important point.
No, it's all right.
One other very important point is when you see these huge fines, and you had Bayer, I think it was, I want to say Bayer, it was $2.2 billion fine a couple months ago. It was one of the largest, if not the largest, fine in American in history of any corporation. Nobody again went to jail, even though it's supposedly a criminal act, and. But they were laughing to the bank to write that check, because that $2.2 billion was based on three different drugs that had been off-labeled or used for, or they were accused. But they had made about $8 or $9 billion just on one of the drugs of the three that they got dinged for $2.2 billion. So even though it's an enormous amount of money, if you're a multi-billionaire, if you're a multi-billionaire, a billion-dollar company, and you know that I'm going to get fined $2 billion, but I'm going to make 20 or 30 billion on my drugs, I would do that deal all day, every day, and that's exactly what's happening.
Yeah, so I can see, like you said, it's not always a bad thing, but obviously in that case, Bayer was in the news recently too for that India thing. Did you hear about that? How they were India was trying to make a generic cancer, a liver cancer pill, and then they sued them because it was like 1% of the cost of their pill.
Exactly. It's cheaper. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
That stuff. How does stuff like Yaz and stuff, you know, Yaz was a perfect example of something that got on the market, was approved, apparently was FDA approved to be safe, and then all of a sudden, you know, was taken off the market. I mean, how can something be FDA approved, so which means that technically it should be safe for you and it should work, and then get taken off the market because it's unsafe?
Well, the way that it's structured is that a small amount of people can override the majority of people in terms of whether a drug should be approved or not. Like we just saw that happen with the new drug, the new Zohydro that's coming out. I think that's how you pronounce it, Zohydro, that's coming out in next month in March 2014. We're seeing that now where despite advisory board and everyone else saying don't put it on the market, they put it on the market. And then this is where you have to start say, well, where are these sinister deals coming from? And this is where I say that there's always going to be a small amount of people in very high positions, some closed door situation where a deal is made because there's so much money. So if we take that, the drug you just mentioned, the Yaz or whatever, by the time that drug got to the market, there's pressure on the FDA to put that drug on the market because this company has spent, again, hundreds of millions of dollars. So they let it go, and they hope that it works out. But then we know it won't because they have the research showing it won't. But by the time and if you see this over and over again, the FDA will come in on their white horse and take the drug off the market. But it's only after that pharmaceutical company has gotten all their money back plus profit. Then they come in and yank it off the market. That's not great for the pharmaceutical company, but they've made a profit, so they can keep it moving. But that's the problem. The drug should have never been on the market in the first place, and there was evidence of that that comes out later after the fallout.
Yeah,
and it's happened
and
over and over.
Zoloft and like Prozac. I mean, that stuff has been caused. There's been cases of it causing depression, right? Or at least causing not depression, but suicides. And I know that in the '90s, there was a big issue with Prozac causing suicides. I know who was the comedian Phil something, who his wife killed him, who was on Zoloft.
Phil Hartman.
Exactly, Phil Hartman. His wife, I believe, was on Zoloft. I mean, my understanding of it that it basically takes away all emotions, so like you just don't care, you know, and you just I guess and I know there's cases. I remember seeing testimony online of women saying that they, you know, they were like seconds away from pulling a trigger to their kids and husband, you know, like, and then all of a sudden they got off the pharmaceutical pills and they were better. Like, that's crazy to think that that stuff is illegal and could have that type of side effects. And you know, to something that made people, I mean, you're really trying to prevent suicide, and in some cases it's causing it. I mean, it's insane that these things are legal. But the DSM was kind of iffy, right? Wasn't there some messing around with that. It was kind of a big pharma kind of had their hand in developing the DSM, basically the Bible for psychiatric drugs and stuff like that.
Well, that's Dr. Peter Bregan's specialty, and he talks about how that's been manipulated from way, way back. Back when we're talking 30, 40 years ago, he talks about how there was a definite shift in psychiatric treatment that went from more talk-based or therapy-based to pharmaceutical-based, and that how those guidelines changed along with it. And there's no doubt, you look at these antidepressants, and right on the bottle, they say may cause depression and suicide, and you're taking it for depression and stop from suicide. It seems to be contradictory. And the reason why that is brain chemistry can get complicated. And there's and depression is not always about brain chemistry, but often it can be simplified to the point where this person has a low amount of serotonin or whatever neurotransmitters in their brain. And so these drugs are trying to increase those neurotransmitters. And by doing that, the patient will feel better. Well, that does happen in some cases, but the problem is the mechanisms of these is what the problem is. These drugs cause what happens is when you feel good or you have a neurotransmitter blast, it goes out into what we call a synaptic cleft or outside these nerves. It has an action, but then it goes back in. It's almost like you can think of opening your refrigerator and the cold air comes out, but as soon as you close the door to keep the refrigerator cold inside, and then the next time you need it, you open up and some cold air comes out. Well, these drugs say, well, we're going to block that door from opening. So once that serotonin's out in your body, it's just going to stay out. So it overstimulates it. And sometimes that has negative effects, like people have all kinds of other mental issues, including suicide. If you give someone something natural like 5-HTP, which is a precursor to serotonin, it's natural. You give the body the ability to make more serotonin. So you can often, I've gotten many people off antidepressants by simply walking up their 5-HTP and walking down their antidepressant and safely get them off their antidepressants and have mood elevation naturally. But again, when you don't know these things, you give them a pill for their depression. And then you have people that shoot people and get depressed, and some people get better. And they're going to highlight that. There's no doubt that some people get better. And the other thing I would say is there's no doubt that even for me, if I have a person that is actively suicidal, like they're going to kill themselves, I mean, first of all, you want to get them protected and admit them. But those are people that you roll the dice and say, look, let's put them on an antidepressant because they're already at the point to kill themselves. But most people that are going to their doctor for stress and I'm not happy and my husband and I are fighting and my teenage daughter, you know, it's day-to-day. It's called life, right? Yeah. But I'm going to get medicated because I'm stressed out. That's not the right reason to get an antidepressant. And that's what's happening all the time in doctor's offices all over the country. And that's the big problem with antidepressants, overused.
Yeah, definitely. I think that's, you're absolutely true. I think a lot of the issues are, and we talked about the overstimulation and just we live in a very stressful life. And so it's normal to be stressed. I mean, like you said, sometimes it's just work. It's just dealing with everyday responsibilities and stuff like that. Usually when you can usually figure it out, and hopefully you figure that stuff out, you usually don't need anything. You're not stressed anymore, not as stressed. Before I know that we're getting to our time, but before I forget, one question I did want to ask you, I wanted to get to was. Has there been any backlash? Because it's kind of rare for doctors to come out. And I like you said, you're not actually technically speaking out against big pharma because you're just saying, hey, there's some alternatives. We have an issue with addiction, this and that. But it seems rare for doctors to actually come out and even say that because I think maybe they don't want to piss off anybody in any corporations or anything like that. Have you had any backlash from the movie or just from being so outspoken about these issues?
There's been very little. It's been overwhelmingly positive. I mean, overwhelmingly. I mean, like for every 99 great things. There's been one mar and I've had I've, one marginal thing. I've had no one just come out and just say, you're some kind of a loser and you're this, that. We've had people say, I've had one person that ended up, we found out working for that worked for pharmaceutical companies, just saying that our film was all propaganda, which it's not. I mean, what I pride myself is on is telling people the truth. It's not necessarily my opinion. I mean, when I say it's my opinion, I'll say my opinion is this, but what most of the things that we're quoting here are just facts, and you have to have your head in the sand or your head up somewhere else to think that there's not a problem when you see all these people dying every day. There are celebrities, and for every celebrity you see dying, there's just dozens and dozens of other people that died that day that are unknowns. So the backlash surprisingly is not been very much, but again, it's early, so the more attention the film gets, I expect that, but I don't live in fear of that. I think that the way that things change for the good, and I always try to be as great. I want to be a great person and do great things. So you have to take chances and you have to put yourself out there. And if you're gonna try and do great things, you have to be prepared for the consequences. And that's the way I feel about it. So I'm not gonna sit silently by when I see all the things that I've seen over the years and see people get harmed and just sit back because I'm personally afraid. So no, I don't fear it, because I think I'm telling the truth, and I'm not the thing. I know I'm telling the truth to people, and people are thirsty for the truth. It's something you just don't get. I mean, you watch politics and you watch the different politicians speak, and I don't care if it's Republican or Democrat. I tell people why even watch it. It's so it's every word is chosen and tested to see how people are gonna hear and feel about each little word. It's like I would like to just get a politician up and just say, look, just take the teleprompter down. Just knock it over. Just talk. What do you really believe? Because I think people respect that. They may not agree with everything that you say, but I think people respect you for having an opinion and believing in what you say and actually trying to make a difference. And that's all I'm trying to do. So hopefully, I'm sure there'll be something, but so far it's been overwhelmingly positive.
Yeah, talking about politicians, you had one of my favorite politicians on your in your documentary, Dennis Kuciak. He's anytime there was people speaking out against banks, against the bailout, against anything, it was always him and Ron Paul. You always saw those two guys. Their names kept popping up, and I'll tell you, those two guys were two of my like they reminded me what a politician should be and what they stood for and so it was cool to see them in your film, because I'm a huge fan of his, and I'm not surprised that he was willing to do your film and outspoken, and because that's his style. He's kind of the same way, just kind of to kind of tell the truth. And him and Ron Paul were a perfect example of the fact that they both saw eye to eye on many issues, and they're both from two different political parties. So I think
Exactly.
so
Yeah.
sometimes we have to just ignore political parties, because like you said, it's PR reasons. It's they do this let's argue about gay rights or this and that, but let's not focus on the real issues, and just to get people to pick a side. And then once you pick a side, you're not open-minded, because obviously you're only going to agree with whatever your political party says. So it just, and really, at the end of the day, they all get money from the same people. Obama gets money from banks. Mitt Romney got money from banks. So everybody gets money from the same people. So I think it's just this thing that eventually we have to kind of wake up and realize that, we probably need a third party to kind of get rid of this issue we have with our political party. I know the UK has a huge issue with just a lack of people voting. I mean, it's like some ridiculous amount of, I think it's like 10% of people come out and vote, something insane. I might be making that up, but it's I know it was something that was really, really low, and it's one of those things where people just don't care. They know that it doesn't matter who you vote for. I mean, you look at America, pretty similar. I mean, it didn't matter who was in power the last two presidents. I mean, they both kind of have the same policies. Nothing really has really changed, and yet they still do a great job getting us arguing with each other about, Democrats and Republicans or conservatives or liberals. And I think
Sad.
at the end of the day, you're right. I think people just we care about other people. We care about getting the truth out. And if we just focus on the issues without the blue and the red kind of separating us, I think we probably would agree. I just think that they've done a great job of separating us with those issues. So you're absolutely right. And so definitely check out his movie. His book, Is it ever going to come out, or are you just going to be like...
No, it's been delayed, but no, June 15th. But if people go to AmericanAddictTheMovie.com, AmericanAddictTheMovie.com, that website has hyperlinks to Netflix and iTunes and everything else. It has information about the book, the second American Addict 2. We have an Indiegogo campaign that we just started a few days ago to raise a little bit of extra money for American Addict 2, so we don't have to take money from some big companies. So yeah, I mean, it's that's the website though that we're sort of putting everything on. But I appreciate being here, the support, and it's great, and I'm sure that we'll have more interactions. And I just think I thank you for doing your show. I mean, we need more of this, and we need more people to listen to your podcasts and shows like this to get the words out.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for being with us because it just it's awesome to get somebody on that who's qualified to talk about these issues, because obviously we do our own reading and our own researching, but I think when somebody hears it from a actual doctor's mouth, I think it hits them and they realize it's not just trying to sell somebody a conspiracy theory or propaganda or whatnot, but it really is a huge issue. And like we said, I think I don't know if we said before we went on air or when we started recording, but it everybody knows somebody who has a pill issue. That's how common it is that
Yes.
it, today everybody knows somebody who's been in a rehab for it or has had some addiction to it. So definitely check out the movie. I saw it on Netflix. It's available on Netflix. Like you said, it's also available on iTunes. Anywhere you can get it or get stream movies and stuff, you can find it. And it's really good. It talks about it gets deeper in all the topics we hit on, like off-label use and all that stuff, and really has some really smart people hitting on these issues. So thanks again, Dr. Smith. I really appreciate you being with us. And hopefully when the second one comes out, maybe we'll have you on again to talk about some of the stuff you hit on there.
I would love to. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Hey, thanks. Thanks, Dr. Smith. Hey, enjoy the rest of your Friday and keep in touch.
You got it.
Thanks. Bye.